To find out how you can reach Latino USA's listeners, visit us online at latinousa.org/support.
From National Public Radio, it's Latino USA.
They told me I had to surrender. If not, they would shoot me. Then they put me in a car, took me to the airport, and then put me on a plane to Costa Rica.
Exiled Honduran President Manuel Zelaya speaking through an interpreter on the BBC. On today's program, the military coup d'etat in Tegucigalpa, the first in the region since the end of the Cold War. What does it mean for democracy in Latin America? And we explore the fast and styling world of BMX with Honduran writer George Jovel.
My passion was always like skating and riding a bike. Like it was just like freedom. Like I can let my hands go off my handlebars and it was like flying. Like it was like, it was crazy. It was just something, it was almost like I was born to do this.
That's coming up on Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Stay with us.
This is news from Latino USA. I'm Angela Maldonado. Throughout the Americas this week, there's been condemnation of last weekend's military coup d'etat in Honduras. In the early morning hours of June 28th, Manuel Zelaya was taken at gunpoint from the presidential palace in Tegucigalpa. He described the moment for the BBC.
Men with rifles who had their faces covered up. They told me I had to surrender and that I had to obey them. If not, they would shoot me. Then they put me in a car, took me to the airport, and then put me on a plane to Costa Rica.
By midweek, Zelaya was in Washington, where the Organization of American States, the OAS, condemned the coup and demanded that Zelaya be returned to power in Honduras. José Miguel Insulza is the Secretary General of the OAS. He says, "We have suggested one solution that we will be pushing forward in the coming days, and that it is to suspend the beloved country from membership in our trade organizations. But it is not Honduras we will be suspending, but rather those who have usurped the democratic government." In New York, members of the UN General Assembly had already added their say, calling for Zelaya's reinstatement. The UN's resolution, supported by the U.S. and co-sponsored by a group of Latin American and Caribbean countries, calls, quote, "firmly and categorically on all states to recognize no government other than that of Zelaya." The White House was quick to condemn Sunday's coup.
All of us have great concerns about what's taken place there. President Zelaya was democratically elected. He had not yet completed his term. We believe that the coup was not legal and that President Zelaya remains the president of Honduras.
President Barack Obama speaking on Monday. By Wednesday, the U.S. suspended joint operations with the Honduran military to protest Zelaya's ouster. Honduras is now under the leadership of Congressional President Roberto Micheletti, who quickly established a provisional cabinet and said he would adhere to the timetable for presidential elections this November. Military coups have been common in Latin America's history, but Micheletti calls the removal of Zelaya democratically correct. After Zelaya's removal, the Honduran Congress said the military action was lawful. The reason given for the removal included Zelaya's insistence on proceeding with a national referendum on presidential term limits. Larry Burns, director for the Council on Hemispheric Affairs, has been watching this story.
It was almost a death wish on the part of the government institutions that they did what they did, since Latin America's memories are still too alive, too vibrant, too full of images of what it was like under military rule to have a government installed by the Honduran military, such as it is.
We have more from Larry Burns coming up later in the program. Diplomatically, many Latin American countries pulled their ambassadors out of Tegucigalpa. By midweek, there was talk of a diplomatic solution that would return Zelaya to Honduras in exchange for amnesty for those who participated in his ouster, and a promise that the president would not seek another term. The streets of Honduras have been tense as military troops and Zelaya supporters protested in the streets. Zelaya supporters have reminded members of the military that they are there for the people of Honduras, and there were reports of soldiers leaving the ranks to join supporters of the ousted president. We'll have more background on the situation in Honduras in a few moments. Turning to other news, in Washington this week, the Supreme Court held that white firefighters were subjected to racial discrimination and promotions. The case comes from New Haven, Connecticut, and the Supreme Court decision effectively reverses a decision of Supreme Court nominee Sonia Sotomayor. Sotomayor was part of a 3-panel judge that heard the case on appeal. The decision has once again raised questions about Sotomayor's decisions, adding fuel for critics of the Supreme Court nominee who have said that her decisions in court could be influenced by her personal views, especially when it comes to civil rights cases. Sotomayor's confirmation hearings are set to begin in the Senate on July 13th. And the world lost a boxing great this week. In Nicaragua, Alexis Arguello was found dead at his home in Managua. Police believe a self-inflicted gunshot wound was the cause. Nicknamed the Explosive Thin Man, Arguello retired from boxing in 1995 with an 82-8 record, including 65 by knockout. He was inducted into the International Boxing Hall of Fame in 1992. At the time of his death, Arguello was the mayor of Managua. That's news from Latino USA. I'm Angela Maldonado. For more news alerts and the latest from Honduras, visit us at latinousa.org.
It's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. The Western Hemisphere awoke on Sunday, June 28th, to the news that Honduran President Manuel Zelaya was taken at gunpoint from the presidential palace in Tegucigalpa and flown to Costa Rica, where he arrived in his pajamas.
Él fue que salió de Honduras.
Zelaya did it to himself. As far as I'm concerned, he's the one that caused all this, because he wants to be like Hugo Chavez and keep running for president. But they didn't let him. I say, don't let him be president again.
Para mí, no darle la presidencia.
Yo voy a Zelaya, yo sí, yo voy a él, yo lo quiero que saquen a...
I'm definitely for Zelaya. I hope they get rid of that new guy Micheletti and restore Zelaya, because it was wrong for them to take him from his home that way.
I support Zelaya and all he does because he's the democratically elected president. He should be restored back to power.
The voices of Hondurans living in New York City. In so many ways, Honduras is caught in the middle of Central America, a waypoint for cocaine making its way from Colombia to the U.S. and Europe, in the middle between a fledgling civil democracy on the one hand and a long and brutal history of military rule on the other. Larry Burns is the director of the Council on Hemispheric Affairs, a longtime analyst of all things Latin American. He talked with NPR's Lakshmi Singh about the coup and power politics in Honduras.
Manuel Zelaya had let it be known that he would like to test the waters to see whether the country would suffer a re-election of him as president. Right now, the Constitution says that a presidential term is for 4 years. You can only run once. In Honduras, basically, you have a small elite and a huge campesino class who have very little access to society's goods and live on the margin of society. Now, Zelaya was a typical Latin American president until all of a sudden when he was elected, he suddenly discovered Hugo Chavez and the ALBA movement, which is a trade and solidarity organization.
Hugo Chavez of Venezuela.
Of Venezuela, the head of ALBA and the most prominent of the left-leaning presidents of Latin America. And there's a whole stream of them now. The Honduran upper class were not so much afraid that Zelaya would hold an election, a referendum, to see whether the nation would re-elect him, but they were worried about his relationship with Hugo Chavez, and they were worried that as his relationship broadened and deepened, Zelaya would become a left-wing militant, shaking up the roost, which is what they didn't want. And so when Zelaya ordered the general, the chief of the Honduran army, to go to the airport and pick up some boxes that would be used in the referendum, and the election boxes had been donated by Chavez. The general refused to do this, saying that the Supreme Court of the country had said the referendum was null and void, as did the legislature unanimously. Now, that sounds scary, but actually the Supreme Court of Honduras is one of the most corrupt institutions in Latin America, closely followed by the National Assembly. And so they misjudge things. Latin America had a very bitter experience during the 1980s, during a period of military rule, when tens of thousands of civilians were killed by the military, 30,000 in Argentina, 200,000 in Guatemala, 75,000 in El Salvador, and people were afraid of anything approaching another military regime. And so what was compelling was the absolute unanimity, where we had the entire membership of the OAS, 34 Latin American countries, the United Nations unanimously passing a resolution saying that Zelaya must be restored. The United States, President Obama, comes forth with, to my ears, almost sounded like a solidarity statement in support of Zelaya. In fact, what Obama managed to do was to restore the United States to good standing in Latin America simply by coming forth with an affirmative statement saying that Zelaya must be returned.
If we can for a moment, Larry, let's talk a little bit about the general, Romeo Vasquez, the head of the Honduran military, a graduate of the School of the Americas. What does it mean to have a 21st century military coup in the region? What does it say to you about those ties to the SOA and the relatively short history of democratic civilian rule in Honduras?
Vasquez simply was a naive soldier who the civilians said this is a lawful order against Zelaya for daring to stage a referendum, which they called an illegal referendum.
But should we be nervous? Should the United States and neighboring countries be nervous that a coup can happen in the 21st century?
I was certainly nervous, and I also believe that it was absolutely important that this coup be undone within milliseconds after it happened, because we must not allow the principle to be established that a group of unelected people, the military, can have the authority to invalidate an election which everyone turns to as the fundamental metric bar of whether a society is democratic or not.
Larry Burns is the director of the Council on Hemispheric Affairs in Washington, D.C. You can find links to the Council's website and the latest dispatches from Honduras on our website, latinousa.org. My thanks to my colleague, Lakshmi Singh. Immigrants to the U.S. bring with them many things, including different ways of doing business. One such practice is known as the lending circle, informal groups of people that pool their savings to help out, in turn, members of the group. No FICO score is required. But having no credit score can make it difficult for immigrants to rent an apartment and can mean high interest rates on car loans and mortgages. One program is working for change for immigrants by taking the familiar practice of lending circles and linking it up with a traditional bank. From San Francisco, Emily Wilson has the story.
At the Mission Asset Fund in San Francisco's Mission District, Director Jose Quiñones is meeting with a prospective member of a lending circle, or cesta, which means basket in Spanish. Quiñones wants to get immigrants out of the financial margins and into the mainstream by building their credit.
Because without a credit score or credit history, it's just nearly impossible to do anything in this society. I mean, you can't even get an apartment rented to you without a credit score. So that's something that is like one of the biggest walls that immigrants sort of face.
Surveys show about a third of Latino immigrants pool their money together in peer lending circles, usually with close friends and family. Each member puts a small amount into the pool. and gets the whole amount when it's their turn. Quiñones wanted to have that activity recorded by a formal financial institution so people could get credit, literally, for borrowing and paying back money. He got Oakland's one California bank to take payments from the lending circle and pay out the pot.
You know, this is not any funny stuff happening. This is an actual loan that's getting repaid. And so for FICO's purposes, that's all they'll care about. You know, they don't care that, you know, there's a group of exotic people meeting together over the kitchen table or some restaurant lending each other money. All they care about is that there's a loan document that is signed by these individuals that is then gets repaid by a certain, you know, by agreed upon time. And that's what they're keeping track of.
FICO is the organization that calculates credit scores. As SESTA members make their payments on time, their scores go up.
Okay, entonces, mira, aquí vamos a poner tu información de la, del banco.
Being part of the financial mainstream is important to El Pedeo de la Cruz, who has come to sign up to be a member of a SESTA.
Pero si uno no tiene record, background,
if you don't have a credit background, you're like a prisoner. They will lend you money, but it's always more expensive.
Si ellos te dicen, okay, te lo voy a prestar, pero te lo presto más caro.
De la Cruz is familiar with lending circles from back home in the Dominican Republic. He says this way is even more secure.
With a banking institution, I know my money is not going to just disappear or go up in smoke. I know it's there and that it's safe.
Currently, there are 4 SESTAs with 28 members. Quiñones says there have been big changes in the 6 months of the program. Members' credit scores have gone up an average of 50 points. They have been making their payments on time, and they have paid down their debt.
Through the activity of the SESTAs that were sort of teaching them about the credit system as a whole, and because they're becoming more aware of how the system works, they're sort of adjusting their behavior accordingly.
Being part of a group is helpful for people to change their behavior, Quiñones says.
Like in the Weight Watchers community, for example, I mean, there's groups of people come together and talk of a very intimate number, which is their weight, and they celebrate their ups and downs. They, you know, people sort of say, I lost 5 pounds this week, and, you know, people cheer them on. And again, that's taking a very intimate number, you know, and making it public in that way, but in a circle of trust.
Before their meeting at the Mission Asset Fund, group members share tortas and popcorn. Some have brought their children and grandchildren. Raquel Melgarejos, as being part of this group, is helping her realize her ambition of running a building to start a cooperative daycare.
El sueño de poner una cooperativa.
My dream has always been to have a cooperative, but it wasn't until I moved here and started talking to these people that I realized that I could. They told me, sure you can. Why not put this money into savings and get credit? Because unfortunately, all dreams are expensive.
Todo sueño tiene un costo. Lastimosamente.
The social capital of groups like this and the financial activity immigrants do often isn't recognized, Quiñones says. He would like that to change.
Immigrants actually are very savvy financial managers. Immigrants, you know, they deal with on multiple currencies, you know, multiple nations. They're really transnational in their view and in their understanding of the world. And so that's actually, that's something of value there. And so we need to, one, change the way we view them so that then we can create the structures to help them integrate themselves into the mainstream of America.
Officials at One California Bank say that as a community bank, their objective is to assist communities. What they'd like to see next, they say, is to grow the program to help the thousands of people who are kept out of the financial mainstream by their lack of credit. For Latino USA, I'm Emily Wilson.
Coming up, all about the high-flying world of half pipes and BMX vert in a minute. No se vayan. Hi, it's me again. This podcast of Latino USA is made possible by contributors to public radio stations. They help pay the freight and cover the costs of making the program available to you to hear when it's convenient. If you're already a member of your public radio station, thanks. If you're not, I hope you'll rethink that decision and make a contribution to support this program and others like it. Visit us at latinousa.org to find a public radio station near you and join the ranks of El Pueblo que Escucha Latino USA. Also, Great opportunities exist for companies and organizations to reach the Latino USA audience online, on air, and through these weekly podcasts. If you're interested in having a tremendous impact on the production of this program, consider underwriting Latino USA. For more information, visit us at latinousa.org/support. And thanks for listening. You're listening to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. George Jovell was 8 years old when he arrived in America, the South Bronx to be exact. He spoke no English when he came from Honduras, but by the age of 15, he was supporting his family. Against these odds, he's become one of the elite riders in professional bicycle motocross, or BMX. From New York, Tesfaye Niguse has his story.
George Jovell out of Tila, Honduras up next. This guy's got an awesome vert style.
George Jovell competes in some of the most elite BMX contests in the country, including the Mountain Dew and LG Action Sports Tours. Last year, he traveled to Berlin, Germany to compete against some of the best riders in the world.
I'm hungry. Like, I'm one of the hungriest guys out there. I'm working hard. I'm riding my bike as hard as I possibly can. I am there on my bike, trying to make this happen.
Straight into a big flare. Crash on that in his first run. Gets it down here into a giant tailwind.
The 29-year-old competes in BMX vertical, or vert for short. Vert is one of four disciplines of BMX sports, which include BMX dirt, park, and racing. Vert is the hardest to master. The rider has a timed run to do as many tricks as he can on a ramp shaped in a half pipe. The top of the ramp is about 15 feet off the ground. Riders usually soar another 10 feet above the ramp as they perform dazzling tricks on their bikes.
There's a lot on the line. There's a lot of money, and vert riding is the most dangerous discipline in BMX. So a lot of these guys are focused. They know what they want to do.
Zach Yankush is a TV commentator for top BMX events worldwide.
And it's time for George's run. The music starts. You look up. He's got an ear-to-ear grin. He's dancing on the deck. He's trying to fire up the crowd. He's just one of those guys that just has this magnetism about him that you're drawn to.
My passion was always like skating and riding a bike. Like, it was just like freedom. Like, I can let my hands go off my handlebars, and it was like flying. Like, it was like, it was crazy. It was just something. It was almost like I was born to do this.
George learned to stay positive in tough situations from experience. When he was 8 years old, George moved with his mother and sister from Honduras to New York City in the Latin neighborhoods of the South Bronx. His mother remarried, and they moved in with George's new stepfather. George learned English, and everything seemed to be going well, until his stepfather was caught cheating, and he left the family. At the age of 15, George got a job and became the man of the house. Freda Medrano is George's mother.
Él siempre me ayudó, empezó a trabajar desde muy joven.
He's always helped us out. He started working when he was really young at construction. He's always been a good son that does whatever he can for us.
Y siempre ha colaborado conmigo en todo.
Freda didn't mind George building small ramps in front of their apartment building and jumping them with his bike. But she was horrified the first time she saw him in a contest at Mullally, the local skate park.
She had never seen me do any of that stuff, you know? So she was just really, like, scared and, like, started crying.
Cassio Perez was one of the best riders at Mullally in the mid-90s. He remembers when George first came to the park. George rode there nearly every day.
We consider him, you know, one of us because he showed us that he could do what we do and kept it going, you know, and made it something out of it, you know, where we was just taking it as a joke and just hanging out, you know.
If anyone knows how much you have to sacrifice to be successful in BMX, George does. He's experienced some intense injuries, like when his bike landed flat on the ground from a 15-foot jump and he broke his wrist on the handlebar.
It was like I just felt my wrist just explode. Like, it just, my wrist bent all the way back, and it just felt like, you know, it broke in half. Like, I don't know what was going on. Like, I I'm like, fine, it's fine. Like, I've had this before. Like, I landed wrong before, and my wrist hurt a little bit. It's fine, it's fine, it's fine.
But it wasn't fine. George shattered a crucial bone in his wrist. Now, he keeps a wrist guard on it to keep it from bending. He has no health insurance or enough money to pay for the surgery that would repair his wrist. So he rides through the pain. Another big challenge for George was his immigration status. He was undocumented until he was 19 years old. In 1998, the United States granted him and other undocumented Honduran immigrants temporary protected status because of a devastating hurricane that hit Honduras. But he had to renew his status every year and had no idea when the status would expire. So he spoke with an immigration officer about getting his green card, but she told him he was ineligible.
I went to school here. You know, I've been here since the third grade. I've graduated high school. I've done, you know, I'm a American. I speak English. I don't, you know, I couldn't understand why all these things were happening, you know. I came home that day and I was just like, I just sat in my room by myself for a while and I couldn't believe like what was going on. I understand why. And then I decided to write a letter to this officer, you know, the immigration officer.
That letter was more like a 30-page journal describing everything George had been through since he first came to America when he was 8. The next day, he dropped the letter off at her office. That night, the immigration officer called him, and she said she wanted to help. 2 months later, George had a green card.
I think if you're true to the things you do, it'll eventually all happen for you. No matter what it is, it'll work out.
This past May, George competed in the X Games Action Sports Tour in China and came in 5th place. Despite George sometimes not being around because of BMX, his mother still wants him to stick with it.
Él tiene mucho talento para lo que él quiere.
He has so much talent and he loves what he does. I know he will succeed in his bike show. I think this year will be when all his dreams come true. I have a lot of faith that he will make it.
This August, ESPN will be hosting the top 15 riders in the world to compete in the most elite BMX contest at the US X Games. George was just short of being invited, but he is still not giving up. He is still practicing and riding in other competitions in the hopes of making it to the top next year.
Nice job! Thompson in his second run. He and the cameraman are happy.
For Latino USA, I'm Tesfai Neguse.
Check out some amazing photos that Tesfai shot at the BMX park in the Bronx at latinousa.org. And for this week, this has been Latino USA. Thanks for listening. We had help this week from Luana Viana, Dan Pryor of Quite Bright Films in Nairobi, and John Berman of Channel 13. Our listener comment line is 800-445-4005, and you can visit us online anytime at latinousa.org. Production support for Latino USA comes from KUT Radio, the University of Texas at Austin, the William and Salome Scanlon Foundation of Austin and San Antonio, and the Marguerite Casey Foundation. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Join us next week for another edition of NPR's Latino USA.
Support for NPR is provided by Kauffman, the Foundation of Entrepreneurship, committed to growing economies and expanding human welfare, on the web at kauffman.org. By Lumber Liquidators, hardwood, bamboo, and cork flooring, catalog at lumberliquidators.com. And by the Wallace Foundation, where arts and education leaders can learn about how to bring the arts to more people. Downloads at the Knowledge Center at wallacefoundation.org. This is NPR, National Public Radio. To find out how you can reach Latino USA's listeners, visit us online at latinousa.org/support.